How y'all doing? Good? Good. Me, not so good. I am going probably through the most difficult time of my student journey in the doctoral program. This is kind of where the rubber meets the road. This is the, I'm at that juncture where you find out if you really got hair on your chest, so I have to look every once in a while and peek. I finished all my seminars, and so that's where you have class. They give you all this work to do, and that's much easier because you know you're going to be in front of the professor. You have to turn your stuff in. You have to maybe read your paper, defend your paper in front of your other cohorts, and so that gives you a motivation to do all that. Half the people who start the doctoral program never finish, because when you get to this part, it's all up to you. You have to be disciplined enough to do the writing and the research without anybody breathing hot air on your neck, and if it doesn't get done, it doesn't get done. And so I'm at this place where I've got to write a 50-page prospectus before I can begin my project. I can't tell you what my project's about because that would spill the beans, and I'm going to need at a point in the spring to recruit some candidates from our church in the project. And if I don't want you can't know what I'm doing, and so that I can recruit the right ones. But everybody is going to do the project once that happens, so nobody's going to get left out. We're all going to do it. And the good news is I've already been doing what I'm proposing for the last year, and it's just flat changed my life. It'll change your life too. In fact, that's what the disparity is, the difference between a PhD and a D-min. I say the PhD, which I'm not getting, is for the smarty pants. And the D-min is for the dummies. I'm on the dummy side, getting the D-min. And the difference is that a PhD only does research. So that person doesn't have to deal with people. A D-min, you not only do research, but you're trying to move people, Christian people, to do something that God wants them to do. That'll change their life and eventually change the life of your church. So it's very practical in that sense. But the committee they gave me has two professors. You realize this is just therapy. I need therapy. I don't have anybody to talk to. I need somebody to talk to, okay? So, I don't know, somebody didn't like me over there at Golden Gate, because they gave me two of the most difficult professors. The Old Testament professor that I have is an expert in Hebrew. The New Testament professor that I have is a scholar in Greek. The Old Testament professor is the guru of Turabian, which is the format that you have to write the papers in. Somebody over there doesn't like me. And so there's nothing that I'm going to get by these people. Okay? So you can't see, when I'm talking to y'all, when I'm preaching to y'all, y'all just go, oh, that sounds nice. Well, Brother Mike, he knows what he's talking about. But when I write and send it to those two guys, they don't have the same feelings. So I have to prove everything that I say. So I'm writing. So I'm spending, since about the last week in May, ever since that time, I've been spending, clocking about 30 plus hours a week in writing. So I'm buried in it. And the problem is, ministry gets in the way. You know, like your job, you know. And so you'll be writing, you know, and then somebody needs help. And you're going, oh, gosh, couldn't they just do this later? So you got to stop, you know, you got to help, you got administration, you got something's going on, you got to make phone calls, and then you got to pick it back up and go, oh, now, where was I? I had a good thought. And you got to start all over, stop, start. So you got all this stuff going on. And then like this week, which is typical of really the last 6 weeks, about the end of the 30 hours, I go, I'm forgetting something. There's something I'm forgetting. Oh, yeah, a sermon. Sunday's coming. So, but it's designed to do all this, you understand. They figured all this out over there at the seminary, you know, or the cemetery, whatever you want to call it, you know. And here's the good news, okay? And this really kind of blends into Psalm 23. Remember, we started Psalm 23 a couple weeks ago. It's challenging me. That's the whole deal. It's pushing me outside of my comfort zone. In fact, yesterday I wrote for about, you know, 5 or 6 hours, and as I was writing, I was thinking, this voice came into my mind, Mike, you need to push yourself further. You need to challenge yourself more when it comes to sharing your faith. You need to quit being so shy and timid and afraid of hurting people's feelings. You need to share your faith. And so I thought, yeah, I need to be pushing myself to do more of that. And so yesterday I went to buy a hat over at Tractor Supply. So the little girl was there and I gave her a tract, right? And I said, hey, have you ever taken the good person test? And she said, no. And I said, well, take it during your break. She said, okay. That's all I did. She didn't have time to talk to me for 30 minutes. There were 6 people in line. But that was all I needed to do. And I gave her a tract. Man, oh, it just feels so good to get out the gospel, to do what God wants you to do. I'm so glad that I kind of heeded that challenge in that instance. And then I went to Walmart. And I actually have learned how to check myself out, you know, in that checkout self thing. And I did that with no problems, but the lady's still there, and so I gave her a track and said the same thing, and she said, well, I'm a pretty good person. And I said, well, just, you know, read it anyway. And then as I walked off, I thought, you know what I should have told her is, you know, people can do a lot of good things, but the problem is they start comparing themselves to others to define whether or not they're good or not, instead of comparing themselves to God. And once they do that, then their goodness begins to diminish. But I didn't get all that until I got to my car in the parking lot. But I'll be ready next time. Point is that I'm being challenged. You see, because there's tension in this life. There's a struggle as a Christian. Yesterday, what I had to try to work through, which caused me a lot of tension, was I had about one page. You got to be simple. You got to keep it, you know, within a certain parameter of space and time. You can't go on forever, okay? They'll send that right back to you. And I had to talk about the experience of the already but not yet. Have you ever heard of that before? It's something that they talk a lot about in theological circles, and it's an enigma. It's a mystery that we all experience. When you ask the Lord to come into your life, simultaneously you are declared righteous before God, you are made perfect before God, and you were seated with Christ in heaven. And you go, but wow, if you were to look at my life, since I've become a Christian, I've fallen down a bunch. Well, I've sinned, I've failed, I've not made God happy. I've sometimes made him feel ashamed of the way I have lived as a Christian. I don't feel like I'm living in heaven sometimes when I'm living here. I certainly don't feel perfect. Well, what happens is you have this mysterious experience. In fact, I quoted a guy in my paper, this particular scholar, and he said that it's absolutely impossible to exhaust that mystery on this side of heaven. But we still talk about it. We still think about it because it's a reality. When you got saved, when you asked the Lord to come into your life, you were given all these things, yet you were given like holiness, yet Peter tells you to pursue holiness. Paul says, you're saved by grace through faith, happens in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, yet he says, work out your salvation. Now, he's not saying work so you can go to heaven. What he's talking about in all of his epistles and all throughout the New Testament is that you have already been justified before the Lord and sanctified and made holy, and you are seated with the Lord because his spirit is tied to your spirit. But what God wants you to do is work out in practice what he has done for you in position. That's the already but not yet. And of course, when we die, all that's over with, past tense, and you will experience all of the not yet. That's absolutely clear, right? So that's good. So we see this tension in Psalm 23. I mean, it's right there, black and white. David knows about falling, doesn't he? Remember he told us that sheep are dumb? Sheep are not the brightest animals in the world. They're not, you know, they're just not. And the reason is they just don't have the capacity sometimes. They have to be trained by their shepherd to follow the shepherd. Otherwise, they'll stray away. What does Isaiah 53 say? We are like sheep. We have all gone what? Astray. Well, I just have news for you that not all sheep are stupid. There are exceptions to the rule. I found one on the internet. There he is, right there. He's not dumb. He's getting some cool, clean water. Now, listen to what, because we left off in verse 2, he makes me to lie down in green pastures. Listen to what David says. He says, he leads me beside the still waters, and he restores my soul. That's what we're going to look at today. A lot of people, and I'm getting help from Philip Keller, a real shepherd, talking about Psalm 23, talking about the shepherd, talking about the sheep. And he said, most people don't realize that sheep can go without water for months. Did you know that? They're 70% water. Well, how can that be? Remember, we talked about the fact that sheep won't lie down and eat the green pasture unless the shepherd takes care of the obstacles of fear, many obstacles that they have. They have to feel that tranquility and peace. And the same thing about this water thing. And they need water, but they can go months without getting water from a stream or a tank or a river. So how do they get their water? The emphasis of Psalm 23 is really not so much on the sheep as it is on the shepherd. What is the shepherd doing for the sheep? He's leading them. The shepherd knows where the water is. The shepherd knows where the green pasture is. The job of the sheep, follow the shepherd. Sheep don't have to know where the water is. They don't have to know where the green pasture is. They just have to follow their shepherd as long as they have a good shepherd. And that's why John chapter 10, Jesus said, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. So where do they get this water? Where does the shepherd lead the sheep? Anybody know? The dew. If you have rich dew on the grass that your sheep are going to eat, no problem. The sheep can go months. And boy, you know, when you're in the Middle East, you're going to really need that. You're going to need good dew. But let me ask you, does dew hang around all day long? What happens when the sun comes up and it starts to heat up? the dew evaporates. So what does the shepherd have to do? The shepherd has to go out there, and Philip would go out there. He would go out there early in the morning, and he, you know, wake up. Time to get up, little sheep. And when they saw the shepherd, of course, they would be calm. That peace would be there. The tranquility would be there. And he would say, time to eat. And he would get them up early in the morning, and there, that rich grass with the fresh, pure, clean water would be there for them so they would be hydrated in their lives. We sang a song, and it talked about tune our hearts. Lord, tune our hearts. You know, that's what we do when we come to church. I noticed before the service, Sean was over here and he was tuning his guitar. Why would he do that? He didn't want to play a guitar that was all out of tune and it sounded terrible. You would hear that. I would hear that. And that would not sync with what we were trying to do. Now, Randy, a long time ago, before they had computer-driven engines, I remember my cousin had a 53 Chevrolet pickup truck, and he had, I think he had a 457 in it. Big old engine. And he had it all souped up. It was, but the timing went out, the timing chain. You remember timing chains? And he put a new timing chain in there, and then he went to the auto parts store and he bought this gun. And I remember he got the engine going and it didn't sound good at all. Oh, man, you didn't do very good on your timing chain. He said, no, Mike. He said, I've got to set the timing with this gun. And this gun had a blinking light on it. And there was this little thing that went around and it had a mark on it. Now, I understand Chevys and Fords run on number one, but Internationals run on, anybody know? Number eight. So his was going to be on number one, so he had to set it. And so he would take that gun, and as it went around, he would adjust it until that light synced up with that number that was on that little cylinder that was turning. And once he did that, man, his engine just purred like a kitten. It was tuned. It was timed. We need the dew of heaven in our own lives. And I suggest to you the best time to get it is early in the morning, before your day starts, before you head into all that trouble. You need to spend time with the shepherd so that he can hydrate your body. The problem is, sheep don't always listen to the shepherd. And so Philip said he remembers one time he was watching not his own sheep, but another group of sheep, and they were headed down this pass between two hills, and they were going down to this mountain stream full of beautiful, crystal clear water. But there were a few little sheep who decided that there was better water to be had. And on the way to the left, they deviated from the group, and they went over to this muddy puddle and started drinking from it. Can you imagine that? And he said, you know, that puddle had all kinds of parasites and liver flukes. It probably had feces from the last group of sheep they went through. But they thought they knew what was best instead of listening to the shepherd, not knowing that just down the road they were going to get some beautiful water. You ever done anything like that? Where you deviated from the shepherd? We need to listen to him. He knows how to hydrate us. He knows how to give us what we need to be the sheep he wants us to be. Now, the next little verse says he also restores our soul. Now, our soul is our mind, will, and emotions for us. But there's also something that sheep do sometimes. And we need to pay attention to that. Here's another picture I found. Now that looks, you know, you might think that's kind of funny, but it's not really funny if you're a shepherd. What do we call that kind of sheep? Cast. A cast sheep, or sheep in big trouble. Okay? Now, Philip would go out every morning and start numbering. He'd start counting. Isn't that interesting? Jesus talked about the 99 and the one. In other words, the shepherd, he knew the count of his sheep. He didn't say, well, I think I got 36. He knew exactly how many sheep. A good shepherd would know exactly how many sheep he has. And Philip knew. And so every morning he would go out, 1, 2, 3, 4. And if he was missing one, boy, he got in a big hurry. He said, because if you have a cast sheep, and that cast sheep is cast in the hot sun, he'll only last a few hours. What happens is the gases begin to accumulate, and it causes all kinds of problems in the sheep, and he can't function, and he's going to die. Now, if it's a cool day, if it's cloudy, that cast sheep could last a few days. But Philip, man, he was on a mission, and he would leave all his other sheep. And he would go and he would scour and he would search. And he said sometimes it would take him hours before he would find that cast sheep. Now, why does a sheep get cast? What happens to them? Well, he talked about that. And he said there are several problems. He said the ones that were cast more often than not were the fat ones. He had an italics, the Baptists, right? He said they get too fat, and so what they do is they'll find a piece of ground, instead of that's level to lay down in, they'll find one sometimes that has a little indention in it, a little impression in it, so that when they kind of roll to the side a little bit, it's a little more comfortable. Oh, they like that. And so they go, oh, I think I'll just go a little bit further. Oh, I like that. And they'll say, oh, I think I'll just go all the way over. And he said, you know, sometimes we as believers are like that. We try to make our lives a little more comfortable than the Lord wants us to. That's why the Apostle Paul said, I discipline my body. I buffet my body so that I will not become disqualified. We want to listen to the Lord. We want to listen to our shepherd. And maybe there's a place in our life that's a little bit more comfortable than the Lord wants for us. There was a time when King David decided he didn't need to go out to battle anymore. He just needed to send everybody else. And he walked up in the cool of the day on his roof to lounge and take a nap. And that's where he saw Bathsheba. David knew about falling. And since he knew about falling, he also knew about restoring. He will restore my soul. Now, Philip said that when he would find that cast sheep, what he would do is he'd go over to that sheep, and he couldn't just roll it over. He had to be gentle with it. And so he would kind of just roll it over a little bit, depending on how long it had been there, and to let the gases inside, you know, just the equilibrium, just things to start, you know, coming back to normal, and he'd get a little bit, and then finally, you know, if he'd been there a long time, he's actually going to have to pick the sheep up and hold the sheep, and he would massage his legs and massage his wool and his head and scratch him a little bit and let him. And then he said he would say something. He'd start talking to him. I thought, well, this is strange. He's talking to this sheep in English. And he would say, when are you going to learn that you can't do this? I thought, well, this sheep can't understand that. But he would really be saying that to the sheep while he's massaging it and finally getting it back together. And I thought, well, you know, that's kind of what the Lord does for us, isn't it? He restores our soul. A soul that has been deviant from the shepherd's leadership is a soul that needs to be restored. And we need that from time to time. That's what 1 John 1:9 is all about. So in my prayer, since my soul is my mind, will, and emotions, I say, Lord, I'm trusting you to renew my mind, Romans 12:2, so that you might transform my life. Lord, I'm trusting you to strengthen my will so that I might do your will on earth as it is in heaven. And since I don't directly control my emotions, Lord, I'm trusting you to heal my emotions, since you are my healer. That's restoration. That's what the Good Shepherd does for us, because he knows we're going to fall. We're going to get cast. We've all done it. But he's there to help us. He's there to pick us up, massage our legs. But he'll also say to us something like, remember this? This was a great illustration, great picture. Peter, do you really love me? What was he doing to Peter? He was restoring his soul. Well, I got one more picture for you before we close. Now, what's that? You got one of those in your family? Black sheep. I'm afraid we all have a little of that in us. I thought of two particular individuals, one from the old, one from the new, who really stands out in my mind. And the old would be the prodigal of the old, Jonah. God said, go one way, and he went another. And of course, we know the black sheep of the New Testament, don't we? The elder brother. God has a remedy, though, because he's our good shepherd. He's there watching out over us. And isn't it interesting when you think about the black sheep? That David said in Psalm 51, as he was repenting, as he was coming back to the Lord from his fall, he said, Lord, you can make me whiter than snow. Would you pray with me? You want to make sure first that he is your shepherd. That you know him, that you have a personal relationship with him. I'm going to be standing here at the front. If there's someone who doesn't know that for sure and wants to pray and ask him to come into their life, I'll be standing here. We'll have somebody to take you in the back and pray with you and talk with you and visit with you, help you. You can just stand up while the rest of us are praying and come on down as I'm visiting with the others. If there's anybody here to make any decision today, whether it's to follow the Lord and believers' baptism, whatever it is, I'll be standing right here as the rest of us are praying about following the leadership of our good shepherd and asking the Lord to give us that pure, clean water, to not settle for anything less, to not be distracted by the polluted water of the world, and to ask the Lord to restore our souls.